Hello, Bulls Nation. Welcome back to another episode of the Rebuildable Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Gentile. And since the last time we spoke, there's actually been a pleasant bright spot with the Chicago Bulls. No, they haven't gone on a winning streak. In fact, since our last episode on February 19th, the Bulls have gone 2-5. Both those wins, by the way, they're only victories in the month of February. I thought this was supposed to be the year they went back to the playoffs. At least, that's what Garpax told me. And that's what Jim Boylan told me, but I guess not. But the bright spot I'm referring to is Coby White. The rookie had himself quite a run in February, winning Eastern Conference Rookie of the Month. He averaged 20 points, 4.2 assists, 4.2 rebounds, and he shot 43% from the field and 41% from three-point range. What sealed the honor for him was the final four games of the month, where he scored 33 points in back-to-back games and followed those up with 35 and 22-point performances. So that was great to see. With all the injuries and really the playoff hopes all but dead, you want to see your young players perform. Coby certainly gave Bulls fans something to hang their hats on during that rough stretch. You know, when the Bulls ended up getting the seventh pick last year again, I banged the drum for Coby White. You know, for where they were picking, I thought there was upside there. I'll admit he's not the most polished player. For starters, he's not a pure facilitating point guard. In fact, during those last four games we were talking about where he was doing a bunch of scoring, his assist numbers were kind of poor. 2, 2, 3, and 3. On the defensive end of the floor, he's been very erratic this year. You definitely see the athleticism, the want to, but he still had a lot of lapses over the course of the entire year. And of course, we know offensively, the efficiency hasn't been there consistently throughout the whole season. Still, you know, you've seen flashes that if he had the right coaching and player development around him, he could be a valuable piece for the Bulls. Now, there's some interesting questions about Coby going forward. First, should he be starting down the stretch? Is he more of a two guard than a point guard? And if there is better coaching that comes in here, can his ceiling be all-star caliber? So, to dissect this and more of the latest with the Chicago Bulls, we're joined by Elias Schuster from Bleacher Nation Bulls. Elias, welcome back. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's, you know, the Bulls aren't doing great. I'm doing great. It's fine. You know, it's a tough time. As always, last time I was on, I talked about it's a tough time to cover the Bulls. Tough time now, but I'm hanging in there.
Yeah, it's been consistently rough, really, since the beginning of the season. But I'm glad you're doing well. That's all that matters. I want to start with, as you know, talking before you came on here about Coby White, and he sort of had a re-evolution here in the month of February. Just wanted to get your thoughts on just his overall performance that earned him the Eastern Conference Rookie of the Month.
I thought he looked great in February. I mean, I've kind of always been on the Coby White train since the beginning of the season. I'm pretty sure the last time we were on, or I was on here, we talked about him a bit, and I've always, you know, I've just always been a fan of his ever since he was at UNC. And so I think what we're seeing now from him is a little bit more of what I actually expected. And I didn't think that we were going to get this right away at the beginning of the season. I felt like he was definitely somebody who we'd see it this season. We'd see it his rookie year because he learns fast. He's kind of someone who's able to adjust relatively quickly. But it was going to just take him a while with facing off against this NBA talent. So I think what we're seeing this February is definitely more indicative of the player we're going to get moving forward. With that said, I don't think he's going to be – I mean, he's averaging like 28 points per game over his last, you know, 8 games. That's not – I mean, we're not going to get that because that would be crazy. But you know, we're definitely seeing the player that the Bulls hoped they were getting. And also in the last game, you know, he had 6 assists. He's kind of helping the Bulls space the floor better. He's facilitating better. So there's a lot of things to be – optimistic about with what we saw this February, and I had a lot of fun watching it. It gave everyone a reason to watch the Bulls, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I also said this before you hopped on, that I mean, really gave us Bulls fans something to hang our hats on, I think, finally this year. And you know, when things aren't going well and you're not in a playoff race, you want to see those young pieces get better. And it was nice to see Coby White have that resurgence, because he did have a pretty decent, I thought, start to the season. You know, there was a lot of optimism, I think, in November and December and it sort of tapered off, and it could have easily been a rookie wall. What are some things that you think Coby White needs to work on in his game as we get down the stretch run here and going into next season? What are some things that he needs to add or work on in his game to be a little more consistent?
Yeah, so I think that's the big thing is you don't want to hang, you're right. He has given Bulls fans a little bit of something to hang your hat on, but it's also, you know, maybe that hanger is a little wobbly or something, because it's always tough to put your hat on something that happens in February or March. And we learned that last year with Lauri Markkanen. So, you know, to say, and that's why I point out to expect White to be able to continue this throughout the next, into next season is relatively unrealistic, but he has shown plenty of good signs. I think when you talk about improvement, things, areas that he needs to get better at, I still think he needs to get better at consistently attacking the rim and finishing at the rim. He's able to do that in transition. He obviously has the speed to get there, but the body control is probably the next step for him. I was talking about this earlier with some friends. I think that the body control, that still needs to get there. He's a strong guy. I mean, he has an appealing NBA frame. To be 6'5", he doesn't look 6'5", but he is. And his wingspan, I think it's because his wingspan is a little bit shorter than he is actually. But you know, he has the build to give a lot of NBA guards problems. And so I think if he can just learn to kind of control himself a little better around the rim, that would be good. I'd love to see him continue to get to the free throw line. That goes hand in hand with what I'm talking about here. He just needs to, and he's been able to do that over the past month a little bit better. But he should be someone who gets to the free throw line pretty easily. With someone who's his size and the speed that he has, that's just an area of this game that should really pick up. And then in general, of course, his facilitating and his playmaking still isn't there. I've always been optimistic about it because I actually think he deserved a little more credit for his passing when he was in college. Yes, he was the number one guy, but if you watch his college highlights, I mean, he could pass the ball. He has he's a decent basketball IQ. Like, the guy knows how to make the right plays. So I think that's an area that he can definitely improve at for sure. And then always improve on the defensive end. But I think people have been relatively surprised with how he's played on that side of the ball, especially recently. He's had his moments. He's been able to kind of stay in front of his guy. He's been able to use his quick feet to his advantage on the defensive end. He's a 20-year-old rookie now. There's plenty of areas to improve on. And even the areas he does well right now is something that he can certainly improve on. So I look forward to it. I'm excited to see what he talks about during the offseason as the areas he needs to improve on. I know that he's close with he's talked about how he looks forward to during the offseason working out with Chris Paul. That's always, that's a guy who he's close with. And if you need to learn how to facilitate and playmake, there's not much of a better guy that can help you out with that than Chris Paul.
You mentioned the facilitating and playmaking ability there. I go back and forth with this on Coby White. I often wonder, is he actually more of the modern NBA point guard, or is he just a combo guard? And I mean, there's nothing wrong with being a combo guard. You know, Drew Holiday's made a pretty decent career doing that in this league. How do you think he shapes up? Do you think he can eventually transform into, a facilitating, playmaking point guard in terms of setting guys up? Or do you think that he's just going to be one of those type of combo guard players in the league?
Yeah, I know some people are quick to jump, to try to label someone in the NBA. And I understand it, but, this guy, he just turned 20, and everyone wants to say that he can't be a point guard. A lot of people want to say, oh, he's just a combo guard or he's a scoring guard. And I don't think I think we need to give him a real full NBA offseason before we even really make any judgments on if he can or cannot be a point guard. When you talk about if I think he fits more of the combo guard role or, the modern NBA point guard role, I think he is way more of a modern NBA point guard. I mean, if you look here, the players that he kind of idolizes, his favorite player that he talks about all the time is Damian Lillard. Like, that kind of gives you an idea of the type of point guard he envisions himself being. And I don't think it's, I don't think it's crazy to think that he could not reach a Lillard level by any means, but be able to be that type of player where, yeah, he is a scorer for you. I mean, he's going to be one of your primary scorers, but at the same time, he can make the right play at the right time. I mean, if you look at these point guards that are a little more scorer heavy, where you look at Lillard or look at Kemba Walker, I mean, these are players who've made a career for themselves averaging, 6 assists per game or 5 assists per game. And that's okay. He can do that. I know that people wanted a more traditional point guard, but I think in the way that the league works right now, if he definitely needs to improve the facilitating, the playmaking, but if he can step into that role, that's a fine role for this team to have. Especially, I just need to see him play alongside LaVine more to see how that works, because they've had some decent moments recently where the two of them look like they could be really lethal on the offensive end. And yeah, so my thought is it's still too early to call. And I think there's no reason he can't be a modern scoring NBA point guard.
Now, he has gotten more minutes with some of the injuries that have piled up, especially in the month of February. Do you think, though, at some point, given the direction this season's going and that they're no longer in playoff contention, should you be starting Coby White, or do you think it's not that big of a deal and, you know, it doesn't matter if he starts, it's how many minutes he accrues and if he finishes the game?
Yeah, I've really gone back and forth on this because I was, up until I would say maybe 2 weeks ago, I was very much on the you don't need to start him, don't worry about it. And I wrote about that earlier this season. It's something that I continuously brought up. I was like, I know people want him to start so bad, but I do think Satoransky does what he needs to do on for in the starting unit. And you have LaVine to be the primary scorer. I think White definitely didn't feel the pressure in the second unit, and that's what helped him succeed at times throughout this season. But I think now you've reached a point where why not start him, especially with LaVine out. I mean, if LaVine is out for even two more games or another game, it's hard to get a read on him right now. But he said the other day that he'd be out a week, which would mean he misses like two more games. Why not give Coby White a start during one of those? Because your offense, especially last night, you saw it against the Timberwolves. You needed him as your primary scorer, and your first unit wasn't able to carry you throughout the game very much. And I think that he can be very important to that first unit, to that starting group. So, but it's hard to talk about because you also bring up if he's getting the minutes, does it really matter? And the point is, if LaVine's healthy and he's still getting 33, plus minutes off the bench every night, I guess it does not matter that much because he's also was closing games. He also was in there for some of the big moments. So I just think right now, if LaVine comes back healthy, fine. Just make sure he's getting over 30, around 33 minutes a game off the bench. I get it. But if LaVine's out and you're really struggling for offense with that first unit, then why not give him a chance? I do think starting in this league matters at the end of the day. I think people are, saying at this point with how the league works, it isn't the most important thing. But for a player of his, his age, and his experience, being in there with the best players is helpful. And getting the confidence boost of saying you're an NBA starter for a couple games, that's helpful.
I think when Chris Dunn went down with the injury, I started then thinking maybe it was time to give him a start. Because you look, I mean, Ryan Arcidiacono, Shaq Harrison, like, do you really want to give those guys the minutes that a guy like Coby White should get, or the starting experience that a guy like Coby White should get? I thought that you could start, Satoransky, if you want to start him at the de facto point guard spot, but have him guard the three on the floor. I think it could have worked.
I'm disappointed that, or let's just say I'm surprised by the fact that Kobe hasn't gotten even a single start this year. I mean, that's kind of crazy to me to think about because every other lottery pick, and I'm pretty sure this is true. I maybe have to check to make sure this is exact, but I'm pretty sure I wrote about this the other week. He's the only lottery player right now that hasn't gotten a start in his first year. I mean, I think even Romeo Langford or something with the Celtics got a start once. Like, he's one of the only players right now who hasn't a lottery pick that hasn't gotten a start, and that is kind of crazy, especially when you consider the Bulls' circumstance. So you're right. I think the fact when you're starting Archie and you're starting Shaquille Harrison, it's that's kind of unnecessary, especially when you want to give your evaluate your players like they say, and you want to give your rookie a chance to shine. Yes, he's done that off the bench, but it's just the starting, being able to have that feeling of being a starter can really mean something.
Injuries have been a big problem with the Bulls this year. We finally get to see Otto Porter and Lauri Markkanen again. Of course, Otto Porter's been back the last two games. Lauri Markkanen was back against the Minnesota Timberwolves. Is there really any point, in your opinion, in playing them now with the way the season's unfolded?
I think that you definitely, if they're healthy, there was no rush to get them back, and they took that they really took that to heart because they were out for a very long time, all of them. But you know, if you need to, you do need to evaluate who you have right now. That's just kind of the truth. And I understand that you kind of know what you have in these players, but as a unit, when you think about it, Wendell, Otto, and Lowry have all only played 9 games together, like total. You know, that in their NBA careers, the three of them together have only played 9 games. Well, now if you want to add last game, that's 10.
That's crazy to think about.
It really, really is, because you think about last year, Wendell was out when Otto came here, and then Otto and Wendell only played the first 9 games together. And, you know, and Lowry was in there, but specifically Otto and Wendell, they've only played now 10 games together. So when you think about it like that, it is really important that all these guys are on the court for these last 20 or so games, because it is true. You don't know what you have there. And injuries, I still think, are not an excuse at all for anything this front office has done or for anything that Jim Boylan has done. But it is true that you have not really been able to see, or like we as you know, as people observing this team, has not been able to see what these guys can do together on a consistent basis. So heading into next season, you need to get an idea of in game, you know, in a competitive situation, what are the roles? How does it fit out? Can Levine kind of work off of these guys instead of feeling like he needs to do everything? Lowry, especially, you need to understand, like, was what we saw earlier this season because of injury trouble and just a lack of confidence? Can he gain that back? Otto Porter, can he stay relatively healthy? And again, what kind of role is he going to take? Because we still don't really know his role on this team. We just know he's a good two-way player and he's a veteran. So we need to see these guys play together. I think everyone around the league thinks the Bulls have a relatively decent young core. They have good young players, but are they a good young unit? Can they actually play together? We truly don't know that right now. And so I think if they're healthy, yes, they should be on the court. And just so we can get an idea, and other front office candidates, perhaps other people that are out there interested in possibly being hired by this team over the offseason, can get a better idea too of what these players are like.
I definitely want to get to some front office talk later, but for the record, I 100% agree with you. I do think you have to play these guys down the stretch, because you do really have to see what you got. And to your point about this unit or these guys not really playing together a lot, I mean, that stems, if you go even far back to 2017, you didn't have Levine around for the early part of that year. It just seemed like even Dunn and Levine weren't on the court together. Lowry and Levine weren't on the court together. Last year, you had some up and down moments with injuries, and the story's still the same this year. So you definitely need to see how these guys play together down the stretch so you know what you're bringing back next year. I wholeheartedly agree. One other question I want to throw out to you regarding Otto Porter. If he was healthy this year, do you think it really would have mattered for the Bulls? Do you think they'd be fighting for one of the bottom seeds in the playoff picture, or it might not have mattered at all?
Yeah, well, the number one answer I see to this question right now from basically anybody is, you know, when Otto Porter was on the team through those first 9 games, they were 3-6. So, you know, that was against easy competition. So the question is that going to change? Probably. I mean, it's probably going to be a little bit better, but I really don't know with the way that the locker room is and the way that Boylan coaches this team. I have a trouble believing that he makes that much of a difference. I think he's a good player. I think he's still a solid role player. A very solid role player if he could stay healthy. It's hard to really believe that if he, you know, had a full bout of health, that he would be able to take this team to the promised land or even the playoffs. You know, it's hard to, hindsight's 2020, but it's just hard to believe that that would be the case with just one guy being healthy. He's a good player, but I can't see it. Personally, I can't see it. I think that this would still be a huge problem. Maybe they have one or two more wins, but I don't think the trajectory of this season changes much, and I don't think this team looks that much different on the court. You know, I still think there's trouble there, and Boylan probably still calls his late-game timeouts. So,
well, and I think that's the key right there, right? Like, you know, at the end of the day, you still have Jim Boylan on the bench. There's still, you know, and again, I don't use it as an excuse. There's still other injuries that have popped up this season. And of course, you know, there really hasn't been proof that this unit can consistently play well together.
We truly don't know. I mean, we don't know what he looks like on this team. We had, what, like 15 games when he got here last year to take a look at him. And he played well, but it's hard to say he's that much of a difference maker to you know, take you to the playoffs or really change your season around.
It's like this Bulls core has a lot of, I think, desirable pieces that other teams would love to have on their roster, but it as a unit together, you know, there isn't any proof right now that they have that cohesiveness.
You obviously, Levine's your number one guy, but is he built to be a number one guy? Should he be? I mean, I think the answer is no. He's more of a number two or number even three guy on some teams. Mm-hmm. So he's not your number one. And sometimes you can make up for that, but in today's league, you just need that clear number one all-star to truly be successful. The Bulls don't have that. If they mm-hmm. find that, this team might be okay, but you're right. They have a lot of complementary pieces, and as a whole, those complementary pieces, it's hard to really make a team that can make an impact.
Well, you wonder what a fresh set of eyes could do with this situation, and you hinted earlier about other executives around the league taking a look at the Bulls because of a potential opening that could be available. We've known that there's been reports since the All-Star break that the Bulls are looking to do a little bit of a reshuffling in the front office. We heard Casey Johnson bring up the name Chad Buchanan as a potential candidate. He's with the Indiana Pacers. David Kaplan, though, a couple of days ago on ESPN 1000, said that he's heard from his sources that the Chicago Bulls' top target is Sam Presti. That's, of course, the Thunder GM. Of course, Casey Johnson, which you wrote about, called out today that that's maybe a little bit of a pie-in-the-sky theory. I wanted to get your thoughts just on this latest report. I mean, I think all Bulls fans could get behind the idea of a Sam Presti, but really, how realistic is it?
Exactly, yeah. And that's what I kind of got at, too, when we first heard of Kaplan's report. I kind of wrote up a post talking about, is this something we can really believe? You know, I think it's when someone makes that big of a claim, it is worth sharing. You know, that's a huge name in the conversation. Sam Presti is somebody who many people believe is an extremely credible and reliable option and would be a very great option for any front office to have in this league. So it's something that even if people believe it right off the bat or don't, it's worth talking about. And so I just kind of brought up initially, even when I heard Kaplan bring it up, it kind of felt like one of those things where it's like, well, of course you have Sam Presti as your number one option, you know? And that's the way that you have to think about it is if it's kind of like saying, hey, Pat Mahomes is my number one option at quarterback for a team right now in the NFL. Like, of course he is. I mean, he's going to be the number one option because he's, you know, one of the best in the league, and that's the guy everybody wants. Is Presti the best? No, maybe that's not the exact right comparison, but he's somebody that everybody would have on their list at number one. So in that sense, yeah, I think Kaplan's right. I think that that's what the Bulls would love to have him, but I don't necessarily think, like you said at the end of your question, is it the most realistic outcome? Probably not. I think the name that you also brought up, Chad Buchanan, that's way more the type of GM, or we don't know if even it's going to be exactly a GM, that they're going to hire. And that's also what's so tough right now is this just in general, the structure that this is going to take, we have no idea what it is. And that's kind of what Casey Johnson with NBC Sports Chicago, his report kind of made all of us, or I think all of us should realize from it, is that the Bulls don't really seem to know exactly what this whole thing is going to look like right now, because he talks about how the team needs how the team's probably going to hire somebody that has complete autonomy, but maybe they want that person to consider Boylan, or all of these things that are like, yes, they're going to do this, but this. And that's tough because in general, it's just hard to get a grip on right now exactly what this team is looking for. You have Kaplan saying they're going to hire one big name, and then Johnson saying, well, actually, they're thinking about multiple hires. So they want to save their money to spread it out among the front office. So in general, as people observing from the outside, I think it's really tough to call. And it's probably tough for Kaplan and Johnson right now to call, too, because I don't think the Bulls are giving the exact information on what the structure is going to look like, because I don't think they even know yet. I think they're just trying to gather as much information as they can, see what names are out there, and
as the offseason nears, hopefully get an idea of what they're going to do. But right now, it's just – it's hard to say the type of name they're going to go after and exactly how they're going to structure this thing.
Well, and two quick thoughts there. You know, with David Kaplan, he's always been pretty well connected to different front offices in Chicago. And so usually when he reports something or hears speculation or rumors, you kind of listen because he tends to get these things right. But I feel like lately he's been a hot take machine. So I'm not quite sure like how much actual fact is around that or if it's something that has legs to it. Because even he said in a tweet, you know, hours after he had put that on the air, that it's a long shot. So it's kind of like you're covering your butt there.
Yeah, I think there's a level of exaggeration that goes into it. It's the same thing that happened earlier this season when he talked about how there was going to be massive changes to the front office. And, you know, he was careful with his wording, kind of like how he was with this, where he was exaggerating or making it sound like it was going to be this huge deal. But then it was like, at the end of the day, you know, maybe it's not as big. And again, I don't necessarily blame him for that. I think it's, you know, he is relaying the information that he is getting, but in a way that makes it a little more entertaining or fun for people. So, you know, I think that there's truth to what he's saying in the sense that this team, you know, wants to go for someone big. I do believe that. And I think it's hard to deny that. I think if this team can, the ideal situation is they go after one of those big names. But also one of the contradictory points between specifically, again, just bringing up Kaplan and Casey Johnson's report earlier today, specifically one of the key differences is Kaplan saying that they're going to be willing to spend a ton of money and kind of just open up their checkbook for a guy like Presti, whereas Johnson's saying that's not necessarily true. I think that's the point we need to focus on more than even just a specific name right now. How much is this team going to how much is this team willing to spend, and who are they going to spend it on, meaning multiple people or just one person? The Bulls have not been that. That's a fact. Both of them, Kaplan and Johnson, said this. The Bulls have never been, you know, heavy hitters in the market for the front office. They've never spent that much money on it. Are they willing to change that? Maybe this season finally broke them. You know, maybe they realized it's an important thing to do. No fans are showing up. They need some new face to make this team excited. But at the end of the day, the precedent is not set. We don't know if this team can spend that type of money or is willing to. And that's going to be one of the most interesting things to follow. And going along with that, where does Paxton play a role in all of this?
And absolutely. So, like, that was my next point was, if you're somebody like a Sam Presti or you're one of those established executives in the league and you're thinking about making the jump to the Bulls, and let's say the Bulls do want to open up the pocketbooks, do you really want to come to a team that puts a lot of conditions in place? Like, you got to come here and work with John Paxson. He's still going to be a key player in this organization. Or, you know, you still have to listen to Doug Collins occasionally because he's a valued advisor with the Reinsdorf family. And, oh, by the way, you might have to consider keeping Jim Boylan. It just seems like a lot if you're trying to get an established name to come in here. You figure a guy like Sam Presti wants to come with a clean slate and, you know, start anew.
100%. I think that if they're shooting for someone like Presti, they probably know this, that you have to give him a complete autonomy. He gets to fire and hire whoever, you know, the heck he wants. Maybe they think if they go for some smaller first-time GM types that they can try to sneak in a couple of their current guys and keep those guys around. But I think no matter who they hire, that person's going to want, you know, complete autonomy. And you can't have Paxton around for that. If it was my choice, I really do wish that he would, and I never like to wish for people completely losing their jobs, but he just shouldn't be there anymore, because even his presence in the background just feels wrong at this point if you're really trying to make change. Now, with that said, if they do somehow manage to, you know, just completely push him to the back, put him all the way upstairs with the Reinsdorfs, and whoever this new person is doesn't even have to see him in the meetings, you know, or all the meetings, and gets to actually do what he wants, then maybe they pull it off. But it's hard to believe right now that with him around and with they have a lot of respect for him, that there's going to be that real change that people want.
And it's tough because I think they're honestly respecting him, are trying to prevent him, how do I phrase this, from being the fall guy for Boylan, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that in a way they're trying to protect his reputation by hoping that whoever they hire, the new hire, they can fire Boylan. And somehow that makes it look like, which is might be false logic, but somehow that makes it look like, hey, it wasn't us who, you know, fired the guy we gave an extension to. It wasn't Paxton. He didn't walk back on his statement. It was the new guy. He gets all of the say. And that's something I kind of wrote about earlier today, where I'm like, I think they want somebody new so they can tell people, we really appreciated Jim, but it's totally this new person's job and decision to do whatever they feel is best for this organization. We support them 100% right now. And that kind of avoids the Paxton having to fire the guy he hired.
And that's interesting. You know, it's a theory that I don't think it's talked about enough, because really Gar Forman is so damaged right now. You can't put him out in the public and have him be that guy doing it, because Paxton's really taken back a lot of that control in basketball operations. So, you know, it would be interesting. Now, if you're looking for a fall guy, I mean, why don't they just go and bring in Will Perdue or somebody that just probably would just take the job for peanuts? Like, if that's the case, it's not going to be real change. I think a lot of Bulls fans would be ticked if it's sort of a menial person just kind of here to do the dirty work for John Paxton.
Well, yeah, and I'm not necessarily saying that I think the new hire would be the fall guy per se. I just think they're trying to I think at this point they probably want to get rid of Boylan. They're just scared to have it be Paxton or somebody, because then everyone's going to turn on Paxton and say, well, you just fired the guy you gave an extension to several months ago. You know, so they're trying to make it seem like it's kind of a mutual decision of some kind. It's a whole weird situation. I just think in general, in my mind, that one of the reasons they're not firing Boylan right now is because they're trying to stand by their decision. And then hopefully whoever their new hire is can take control of the matter. And then they can try to pretend like it never happened. Whereas if a guy like Paxton had to do the job, then people can kind of turn it around on him again. So But again, that's all like conspiracy theory talking about stuff. I think regardless of the situation, this team needs to make some serious change. And that comes with hiring a hopefully known name. If it's not known, a legitimate, young, bright mind that can come in and have complete power to make the adjustments that are necessary. Clean out the scouting department, pick his or her own head coach, and really change the culture. Because right now it's the same old, same old. It's been that way for the past literally 20 years. And if they're going to make change, they need to do it in a big, big way.
The offseason certainly will be a lot of fun to keep an eye on with some of those changes maybe coming around the corner. Elias, before I let you go, real quick, where can people find you and Bleacher Nation Bulls?
So you can find me on Twitter at Schuster underscore Elias. That's S-C-H-U-S-T-E-R underscore E-L-I-A-S. As for also on Twitter, go follow Bleacher Nation Bulls, our account there. That is just at BN underscore Bulls. And then BleacherNation.com/Bulls will give you our Bulls stuff, but just go to BleacherNation.com. We got plenty of good content on there for the Cubs, the Bears, and the Bulls. And of course, as always, thank you for having me on. I always appreciate coming on, so thank you.
Absolutely. And actually, I wanted to extend an offer to you. We're going to get back to doing rebuilding plans with our different guests when the season ends. And I would like to extend an offer to you to play the role of a Bulls GM and provide your rebuilding plan for the Chicago Bulls. Would you like to come on?
Oh, I would love to. I'll start working on it right now. I'm going to start reaching out to other GMs. I'm going to start gathering my information. And I'm going to start making up my list. It's going to be good. I'll be ready for it.
All right. Sounds great. We're going to make you actually the first one to do it. So be ready.
Deal. Okay. All right. You got yourself a deal. I'll do it. We got a championship in 2 years.
Excellent. Elias, thanks again for coming on. We'll hear from you soon.
All right. No problem. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Rebuildable Podcast. Be sure to check out more episodes on Google Play, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and on Rebuildable.com.